Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Cementir Holding Half-Year 2020 Financial Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Marco Maria Bianconi, Head of M&A and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon and good morning, everybody. Welcome to Cementir Holding 2020 first half results presentation. Apologies from our Chairman and Chief Executive, Francesco Caltagirone, who cannot attend this presentation for a personal impediment. He sends his apologies, and I'm afraid you have to bear with me for the next half hour. I hope to be able to answer all your questions at the end of this presentation. You should have received a presentation deck, which I will then go through quickly and leave the floor to any questions you may have at the end. So, starting with page number 2 of the presentation material, you can find the highlights for the half-year results. Revenues for the 6 months reached 570.4 million euros, down 3.6%, mainly due to the COVID-19 impact, mainly in Belgium, France, Malaysia, and Norway. Actually, cement volumes for the period were up 6.3%, thanks to a 40% increase in Turkey. Our EBITDA was down 11.2% to 97.8 million euro, despite a 5.6 million one-off impact from settlement of previous transactions and some equipment disposals. Overall, we recorded a higher EBITDA in the Nordic and Baltic, China and Egypt areas, and lower EBITDA in Belgium, USA, and Malaysia. Net financial position reached 280.6 million euro, up 41 million from the end of last year due to business seasonality. If compared to last 12 months, net financial position declined by 118.5 million euro. A couple of pages on how we dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic. Following the outbreak, we assigned priority to health and safety of our people and employees, social distancing, turnover, and smart working. As an example, we focused on cash preservation with a particular emphasis on inventory, trade receivable, cash collection, and customer orders. We took extraordinary measures of cost containment, and we deferred some capex as announced during Q1 results. Around 20 million, 20.4 to be precise, was the deferred capex year to date. We utilized some local social contribution and tax deferral schemes to the extent of around 12.8 million euro, which are clearly a one-off impact which will be reversed in the coming months. To prevent any liquidity shortage, we drew available existing facilities. As this cash was not utilized, we have reimbursed them in the month of July. Page 4, the main impact of COVID-19 on our business, we had two plant closures, one in China from January the 24th to February the 21st, and Malaysia from March the 18th to April the 17th. Other plants in our group have witnessed temporary activities slow down. By region, very quickly, because we will have details later on, Nordic and Baltic activity levels remain broadly in line with previous year. Belgium and France, we did experience a negative impact from lockdown, mainly in the month of March and April, with a recovery in the following weeks. In Turkey, we experienced a sharp slowdown during the crisis, followed by a sharp volume rebound afterwards. In the United States, there was a slowdown during the lockdown and the recovery, but a bit patchy depending on each state. In China, there was a month-long lockdown, which caused a severe drop in activity, but was followed by rapid recovery. In Malaysia, following a month of lockdown, volumes continue to remain subdued in the domestic market in some of the export markets in Southeast Asia. In Egypt, general volumes slow down, but then a strong rebound, same as in Turkey. Going quickly through each of our regions, from page 5, Nordic and Baltic, which as you can see accounts for around 69% of our EBITDA in the half year. Actually, domestic cement volumes in Denmark were up but 8% due to increased market activity overall and favorable weather conditions. Exports, both white and gray, were down, mainly due either to U.S. shipments in white and COVID-19 impact in gray. RMC volumes increased in line with domestic cement, with prices moderately up. EBITDA overall was up 26% in the period, mainly driven by the cement business. Norway was the country that, within the Nordics, experienced the sharpest decline, with RMC volumes down by 15%, mainly due to lower construction activity, oil price trends, and COVID-19 effect. The volume contraction was mainly over the quarter, April to June. Higher prices, thanks to better product mix, but we have also to note a depreciation of the Norwegian krone versus the euro, average 6 month rates of about 10%. In Sweden, there was a favorable weather and robust construction markets, with RMC sales volumes up 5% and prices slightly down due to sales mix. Aggregate volumes were up and prices slightly down. Moving to on page 6, Belgium and France, which accounts for about a quarter of our EBITDA in the period. You can see the great cement and clinker volumes were down by about 10%, with a drop of 30% between March and May due to COVID-19. June volumes rebounded by about 7%, with prices up in line with inflation. Also, RMC volumes were down about 20%, mainly due to Belgium and France lockdown measures, with June volumes up 9%. Prices were in line with inflation and slightly up in France. Aggregate volumes were down 14%, mainly in France, with prices outpacing inflation thanks to better products and customer mix. EBITDA overall was down 25.1% to around 23 million euro. Moving to page 7, North America. Here, we did experience a drop in white cement sales volume by about 4.7%, mainly due to COVID-19 lockdown measures in April and May. We experienced lower sales in Florida and some delays in relevant projects. Prices were moderately up. EBITDA was down 8.3% to 10.1 million euro. Moving to Asia Pacific, which in the period accounted for around 8% of our EBITDA. China, we did experience a decline in volume of white cement due to the plant shutdown between January the 24th and February the 21st. Sales prices in local currency rose due to favorable mix, and EBITDA was up 11% thanks to higher sales price and lower fuel and electricity costs. In Malaysia, on the other hand, white cement domestic sales declined by 40% due to activity restrictions from March the 18th to April the 17th. Average prices in local currency increased thanks to better customer and product mix. Although export volumes declined by around 20% to delayed clinker shipments to Australia. Overall, EBITDA in Malaysia declined by around 49.6% due to lower volumes and higher fixed costs. Moving on to page 9, Turkey. Here, grey cement volumes increased by around 40%, with domestic sales volumes up 25%, driven by infrastructure projects near Elazig and new projects in Trakya and Kars. Also, exports nearly doubled thanks to new market opportunities. Downward price pressure, though, was very severe due to price competition. RMC volumes increased by about 11%, with local currency prices slightly down. We have to notice also a 12% devaluation of the Turkish lira versus the average euro exchange rate over the last 6 months. So price tension and higher input costs determined a minus 8.8 million euro of EBITDA in Turkey, which includes a 3.1 million euro one-off cost for some waste equipment disposal. In Egypt, turning to page 10, which accounted for around 4% group EBITDA in the first half year, domestic cement volumes declined by around 10% due to government curfew. There was a significant recovery afterwards, with domestic prices in line with inflation. White export volumes increased by around 13%, and EBITDA increased by around 17% due to higher volumes and lower fuel costs, despite increased maintenance costs, and also thanks to an 11% revaluation of the Egyptian pound versus the euro. Moving on to Italy. This is a residual part of our business. Clearly, we have a revenue increase thanks to higher trading volumes at Spartan Hive, our trading company, which recorded a revenue increase of around 75%. But EBITDA dropped to minus 5.9 million due to both 2.5 million euro one-off settlement of previous transaction and some intragroup reorganization costs. On page 12, you have the consolidated income statement, which you have received also on the press release. And on page 13, you have the full year guidance. We promised to, release some further details about our outlook. We expect full year revenues of around 1.2 billion and EBITDA between 230 and 240 million euro. Net financial position around 180 million and a capex of around 60 million. Clearly, these numbers, this forward-looking indication does not include any new outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic in the coming months. And this clearly reflects the point of view of the company management and does not represent any guarantee or anything else. So this is basically the presentation. And then I would turn over to any questions you may have.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Emanuele Gallazzi with Equita. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. I have a couple of questions. The first one is on the outlook. I was wondering if you could share with us your assumption or view on the trends in your main markets, so Nordics, Belgium, and United States. And the second one is on Turkey. Can you give us some color about the current situation in the market and on your expectation for the second part of the year? Thank you.
Thank you, Emanuele. Yes, sure. The first question on the outlook. So going in the pecking order, we think that our exposure to the Nordic and Baltic region is clearly has brought several benefits. We see good trading overall in the region. And as you can see from the half-year results, so we think that with the exception of Norway, where clearly there has been an impact due to the oil price trends, we expect a second half of the year which is pretty much in line with the previous year. We don't expect a significant growth because the second half of last year was already a good half year. But we don't expect any meaningful changes in the trends that we've experienced during the first half. So I would say a decent outlook for the region. We expect, therefore, a continued good trading in the area, with some differences between Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, but pretty much along the lines of the first half.
Okay.
Moving to Belgium and France, clearly this region has suffered more during the first half for the reasons you know very well. But also, we have to say that since the operations resumed, there was a good recovery. So we expect, you know, this region to continue to do well in the coming months. Clearly, the lost ground in the first half will be difficult to recover completely. But we think that things seem to be looking up in this area in terms of trading. North America is a bit of a different path because clearly the country is still not completely out of the woods in terms of different states. We have witnessed some weak pockets, especially in states like Florida and in states in the southern belt where we are clearly exposed and we have some operations. So, I mean, overall, we expect the U.S. clearly to recover and improve the results, but they will be in the second half somewhat weaker for the whole year compared to last year. So there will be a recovery. We expect the recovery to occur, but it's still a bit patchy depending on each state. Then moving on the other regions, we see actually China, the first one which entered into trouble for the reasons we know very well, but is also been the first to exit. So we think that there actually the second half looks pretty well underpinned. Malaysia is still a bit more behind. Because it has a portion where it exports to the domestic market that is slightly recovering, and also it exports a big portion of its production into Australia and Southeast Asia. And here the outlook is a bit less sanguine, and I would say that Malaysia is a bit behind China in terms of recovery. So there we expect a bit of a weaker rebound, but still an improvement in the second half of the year. As far as Turkey, clearly this is a bit of a wild card of late for a number of reasons. I mean, clearly competition, as we mentioned, still is fierce, is very strong. But I have to say that we have witnessed a pretty strong activity and rebound in trading. In some area, we even have shortage of products. So I think volume-wise, we do expect that the loss, which excluding the non-recurring items, was recorded in the first half, to be partially recovered in the second half. So still, we're not expecting a profit on EBITDA in the black for the year, but we expect this negative EBITDA of half year to be somewhat reduced due to better trading in the second half of the year. So clearly this is a bit subject to what will happen in the market, but we see signals of strong recovery across the country. The problem with Turkey sometimes is a bit the pricing, which tends to be quite different across the markets. In terms of completing this roundup on the different regions, Egypt is well on track to recover, and we expect therefore a good second half. So it should be trading quite well, and because most of its products are exported, and the domestic market is doing relatively well. This is pretty much the major areas.
Thank you, Marco. Very clear.
Anything else? Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from Bruno Permutti with Banca IMI. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have two questions. The first one concerns the guidance for the EBITDA. I've seen that you had more or less 5.6 million euros of not recurring costs in the first half of the year. So I wanted to understand if the guidance is for recurring EBITDA or stated for reported EBITDA, and what is the if you already had or if you see that other non-recurring costs are possible in the second half of the year. And always on the EBITDA, I was looking at the outlook for the second half of the year. It seems to be a little bit lower than the second half of 2019. I was wondering if this is mainly attributable to US, Malaysia, and Turkey. So if you see lower results from these countries and a substantial stability or improvement in the other geographical areas. So I wanted to understand if I look at the first half results are quite strong compared to the first half of the of 2019, considering the exceptional impact of COVID-19. So I would like to understand if you see an additional impact of COVID-19 and so a gradual improvement, or if you see that some countries are structurally giving a lower than expected profitability. I was a little bit long, but the last question was related to the CapEx. So I would like to understand if the original CapEx plan will be, so I mean the green CapEx plan will be delayed, and if you can give us a time horizon for these investments to take place, considering the reduction for 2020.
Oh, thank you, Bruno, for your questions. So try to answer them in order. So the first one is that the guidance is provided on a full EBITDA basis, so taking into account the charges, the 5.6 million charges that we've highlighted as one-off. So it's not on a non-recurring basis, it's full EBITDA. And in terms of the outlook for second half and the expectations, I mean, I think what we said, and you can see on page 13 of our presentation deck, we are giving this to 30 to 40 million, so a range, because we need to leave a bit of a buffer to be able to provide a credible range. It clearly does not take into account a second leg, let's call it, of COVID-19 related crisis. So as you can see from the disclosure underneath the slide, this expectation, this say, guidance does not include new outbreaks. So clearly, if there is going to be a further closure, a further lockdown, obviously this is not included in our figures. I mean, I think there are a couple of wild cards in your forecast here that are the performance of Turkey. That clearly is, I mean, a bit more difficult to predict, although all signals from the market, at least as of today, point to the direction of quite a strong trading regime. We have to see how much we can then translate into profits, but it seems a strong market activity at the moment. And we do not include, therefore, in this say EBITDA guidance range, any particular further one-off non-recurring cost, bearing in mind that clearly, you know, there are a number of question marks in the portfolio that is difficult to predict at this difficult juncture. So we have withdrawn the guidance last quarter. We feel more comfortable to provide you with some elements today, but I'm sure you understand that a dose of caution is also necessary at this current juncture for a number of reasons. No, so we think that this range is achievable. And in the end, the biggest profit contributor for us that accounts for over 60% of EBITDA, which is the Nordic region, should post results that are pretty much in line with, you know, expected to be not significantly different from last year. So this was the second question. As far as CapEx, this is a good question. I mean, clearly, the CapEx of 60 million, we clearly said that we, within the measures of cost and cash containment, we clearly committed to postpone and defer some investments, as you may understand. But having said that, we are not backing out of the commitment of reaching, you know, what we've said that we would commit to invest the 100 million in green CapEx, and all our commitments vis-a-vis, you know, investments in new technologies and in environmental are still, everything is in place. What can happen is that this special juncture would determine just a slight delay of the of some projects, which may go slightly beyond the 2 year, 2.5 year time frame we set ourselves as a target. But absolutely, all objectives of the 100 million capex, et cetera, are in place. This year, also to preserve a certain trajectory in terms of cash flow generation, debt reduction, and all the likes, we have implemented a number of capex restrictions, which would determine a reduction in the expected CapEx, which, as you may recall from previous presentation, we were expecting to spend around 86 million for the year. So clearly, we are reducing this amount to around 60. But again, this is just due to, I would say, a certain degree of caution in spending our cash flow, but does not mean that we will back out from the commitments we have made as far as green capex and new investments and our industrial plan.
Thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from Tobias Werner with MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Marco. Two or three questions, if I may. Number one, just remind us of your total energy bill for 2019 and how you see that developing for 2020. Secondly, your average price development in the first half, maybe you have that handy and could provide that for us. And then just lastly, with regard to some of the P&L items, the financial charges, whether you could give us some guidance there on the back of what we've seen in the first half, and also the tax rate, please.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I will try to answer them in order. Actually, I will start with the last, and then you remind me of the others if I forget. Okay, in terms of tax rates, we said that for the year, the like working assumption is around 25%. We did record a slightly higher tax rate in the first half of the year, and this was due to some exceptional or non-tax deductible figures. So I mean, this is a sort of a one-off, but we still stick to the 25% tax rate as a working assumption. So this is the tax rate. Then, sorry, the other thing, can you remind me the other questions?
Yeah, the energy bill 2019 and how you see that developing in 2020. And then the pricing, the average price increase or a development in the first half for the group. And then also in the financials with regard to some guidance around the financial charges.
Yes, okay. Financial charges, we are around, it's going to be, there's going to be, I mean, you've seen the financial charges for the half year. We don't expect them to be particularly different in the second half of the year overall. And so, you know, we think that a good working assumption is, you know, to have financial charges more or less in the second half of the year, similar to the first half. So we don't expect major changes in the trajectory of the financial charges. So this is as far as the financial charges, and I think clearly that the trajectory of the debt reduction will mean that overall, over time, they will be reducing. So you can expect in the second half of the year to have a slightly lower financial charges compared to the first half, but it will also depend then on how derivatives move, etc. So it is a bit difficult at this stage to give a precise idea, but more or less this is what we expect. Then I mean, I think what is the other question?
Energy, you know, energy costs last year, and what do you expect them to do this year in terms of percentage?
Yeah, I mean, the energy bill, I mean, it's I'm not in the position to give you an exact number. I mean, I'm sure that the last year you can look yourself in the energy cost on the annual report. I mean, what I can tell you is that overall the energy bill is clearly, if you do an average cost of our fuel that are generally either pet coke or coal, tends to be clearly a derivative of oil, and so the average cost it should be lower this year from last year. So there is clearly a bit of a tailwind from a lower energy cost, which will definitely impact our figures going forward. And so, I mean, overall, we think that our energy bill this year could be lower in absolute terms compared to the previous year. But we do not give, you know, exact figures, but, you know, to give you a trend, this is where it's heading. And this is also a function of clearly the increased use of alternative fuels and alternative, you know, new technology that allows us to consume less fuel. So overall, we expect an energy bill that will be lower this year compared to last year.
Okay, thank you. And average prices first half, what would you say for the group? Where are they in local currency?
Average price of product cement prices. Well, it's a bit of a difficult question to answer in one shot because, as you know, we have exposure to a number of countries. But I would say, and as you know, also prices tend to be relatively local, with the exception of clearly the export market. But I can tell you that with the exception of Turkey, where there is always a bit of a some tension on prices because of the structural overcapacity that has plagued the country for some time now, I think that in the Nordics we experience a decent you know, pricing in line with inflation overall. And in North America, actually prices, average pricing was slightly up in terms of cement. In Belgium and France, prices tend to be more or less for cement in line with inflation, in same in RMC, and in aggregates, actually, there was a slightly better than inflation as a trend. So I would say good pricing in Belgium and France. Asia Pacific, I think that in China, prices are overall are well underpinned because trading conditions have returned to normal and trading is quite good. I mean, Malaysia is a bit of a different situation because it very much depends on the export mix. In the domestic market, average pricing in local currency is actually pretty good, is improving, I would say, low single digit upwards. In the export market that account for around 80% of the volumes produced in Malaysia, it's a bit of a different picture because it depends on the export mix. So I would say that overall, as a mix, prices were slightly higher due to a better country mix and some exchange rates help. But, you know, we hope to be able to keep that in the second half of the year. In Turkey, we already spoke about. And in Egypt, overall, you know, pricing were in line with domestic inflation. So they're relatively okay. I hope to have answered your question.
Yes, thank you very much, Marco. Just one last question, if I may. Your share buyback program, how much have you spent on that so far?
No, so far, we have not yet initiated the program. We just announced the 60 million buyback. And it would be a decision of the board to actually engage and decide when, how, and the technicalities to start the program. I mean, it's something that clearly is in the pipeline, and we want to clearly pursue within the framework that we've announced, but so far we have not executed any buyback so far.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Mr. Bianconi, there are no more questions registered at this time.
So thank you very much then for your interest in Cementir Holding. And we wish you a pleasant rest of the day and look forward to speaking to you at your leisure. Thank you very much.